Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
This is a podcast for Professor John Canning, and I'm going to talk about chemistry teaching station, which I'm developing, and we've just hit I finished off the research prototype, and that's where I've looked at basically getting the concepts together and seeing what parts should go where, and we're about to hit the production prototype. I want to describe that to you, and I'm going to send you the cost of it, and just have a bit of a robust discussion about whether we can fund it and produce it going forward, or perhaps not, just a general knowledge of it. So what you're hearing now is a podcast, and it's a podcast while I'm walking. Now, it's part of the general cardiac rehab to really get on top of stuff, sort of lose weight, increase fitness, increase cognitive ability, the maximum that you can. And behind this has been a whole technical push to be able to produce podcasts at fairly high speed. This is the actual technical software to actually take from your dictaphone and publish it on the internet, and also the technical stuff of the recording devices and the different microphones. And surprisingly, we've just gone through a week of sort of a bit of a horror week. It hasn't really taken a long time, but it's discovering little problems as I've gone from one microphone to another, and it's sort of caused a cascade of problems down the line. So that's the context of it, and while I'll take a little bit of a break, then I'll be back on to talking with you. Okay, so the general idea is given the Internet of Things, which can automate your house, is there an Internet of Things which can provide a generic automation which would allow a greater amount of chemistry to be taught and in a better way? And the answer is, I think, yes, we can actually construct a nodule of sensors and kit them by battery and appropriate boards up to the internet. And this has been sort of a little bit of a back challenge for me. So for the next project on, after building some basic teaching cubes, I think you said the cube, this is John, you said the cube reminded you of Orac. I went back and did some sort of fun research on it on the YouTube. You can see how Orac and Blake 7 go together. And I was thinking, well, I'll have to call these units Orac, and it would be observe, reason, and conceptualize. That's the idea of these cubes. So as opposed to these generic cubes which has the entire experiment inside it, there's the next one of these generic cube which you open up and you just conduct your experiment on it, and it's completely recorded on the internet. And do this, I have said, it has to be battery powered. The best battery initially, and this is going to be changed as I go through it, is a mobile phone battery. And the best components are this. So, and they cost this much. Let's actually build it and see if it can actually come together. And there's a lot of effort to work out how to download programs into these little chips and how to wire it up. And you hit yourself, but I did make various sort of basic mistakes. But once I've wired it up, then how to actually get it to connect to a wireless network, got that okay. And then once it's a wireless network, how to actually send something to a web page, and how to program a server. So all these little things. Sort of having some knowledge down the track about how you're going to do things meant that you didn't dwell too much on the web server, realizing that you could actually have the web server just as a hard drive, and that sort of a web hard drive that your computer picks up. Now you'll hear a bit of noise, perhaps not as much noise as you'd hear with the other microphone. So I've got a shotgun microphone. I'm talking this as I'm walking up the streets of Glenbrook to you. So look, there's that general thing and the general idea of, you know, for, but give me a budget of $100, what can I do with it? And what can you get and what can I learn from it? So I used Arduino boards for the quantum oscillator. Very, I think, a very important experiment to display. And I used something called an Adafruit Feather Hussar. Now, this is sort of like you're going into a car yard, and when you first go on, people sort of describe your sporting life, where you're going and things. And, hello. So I realised, sort of suck it into the sort of sports car system, and I've got this system up and running. And you can see on the website, Glenbrook Institute, all one word, .org/test. And essentially each device now, if you give it a letter code, will automatically write the information to the internet underneath that directory by the hour, date and hour. So for each hour it will write a file, roughly 300 kilobytes, sort of like a nothing. And what happens is during the hour that file slowly gets written off, and then it opens up the next one. So you've got this structure of files, and essentially then on the back on your computer now goes up to your directory and says, you know, what's the dates, and it's sort of rather a nice neat way of displaying where to go. And then you say, what's the data from these points? This is at the various start, and at this point, once it's on your computer can then recompress the information and shoot it back to the internet. So it's really, really light. And so I've just done that section. And one of the things you can see is that you do have the whole history of each sensor. So you can see what sensor is playing up, what are the features and the various things to do it. So it looks as though that we can get some really good results out of this with a bit of engineering. And I think there's sort of like two things that I'll discuss with you offline, because this is a general podcast. Everyone can listen to it, so everything I discuss isn't patentable. But there are two key things which I think is patentable. One is the interface to measure the mass of your experiment. That key interface, making that robust and idiot-proof, that's a key patentable thing. And there's another patentable thing to integrate it with the actual experiment. And this is a key thing from knowing enough about commercialization. You know initially what you can discuss around. And I'm going to have to stop here as I go into this shop. Okay, we're back recording again. Sorry for you, that sounded like a break whatsoever. Hopefully, that being said, what I wanted to say is that essentially, the sort of the real value add, I think you know, and I from working all those years ago, is the ability to automate things, integrate things, and then subsequently, I've been able to actually achieve measurement accuracy almost defying the spec sheets. And this is using algorithms and error mathematics. So in terms of automation, I've been able to get really nanometer accuracy by using programs which rock and back, or yes, a rock the components, sort of jolt the components back and forth, such it takes out all the backlash and things like that. And here it looks as though I should be able to do the same to take out the drift out of these sensors and to account for all their behavior and to actually get phenomenal accuracy. So we're talking about 20th of a degree, 50th of a degree. I should be able to do that and get sort of phenomenal accuracy out of it. And this is basically putting sort of almost a scientific team in a box. And so this is our Orca going forward. Now, so this is up and running, and you can look at it. And so essentially it's a bit rough at the edges for the moment, in that I have to hook it up to a USB and say what the wireless network is and what the name of the device is. Ideally, one would want to be able to just drop in a chip which says that. So you have a USB stick, and it. I think you'll be able to do that. That shouldn't be too hard to do. So we've got this box, which is basically like a document holder, and you open it up, and you can run your experiment on it. Now, as I've said, I've run the course and realised, what the limitations are. So mobile phone batteries are brilliant batteries. They're very small, light, flat, slim. They're ideal for a mobile phone. And they're ideal for the intermediate bursts of a mobile phone. So a mobile phone's off every once in a while, and it's just, so it's got hours of battery life because it only beats for one that uses transmission power for just 1% of the time, where it just reports where it is a couple of times a second for a hundredth of a second out where it is. Now this isn't possible with particularly a thermocouple sensor. Now a thermocouple sensor relies on the voltage effect from different metals in a temperature system. Now, just going back to the quantum mechanics, the simplest battery you could possibly make is a sticking a nail in a flame, and if you stick a nail in the flame, the electrons will be repelled from the heat and wind up on the opposite side out of the heat, and it does actually become charged. This is one of the things, is if you put a metal rod into a flame and an electrometer on it, the electrons will be pushed out, and you'll see the electrostatic charge repel away from it. And so one of the things for a thermocouple to work on a chip, it measures analog voltage, but it also requires a hot junction, and the hot junction has to be heated. And so a little thermocouple chip takes up incredibly 0.1 of an amp of energy. Now 0.1 of an amp of energy, of current, doesn't seem a lot, but if we're planning five or more thermocouples, and I'm planning it to be on all the time, it practically means that just a moderate mobile phone battery that you put in can only power your device for about 3 hours before it switches off. And so we have to move away from that. And the other thing is that the mobile phone battery necessarily supplies at lithium polymer power levels, and that's 3.3 volts, which is all okay. However, some of these sensors, like the pH sensor, requires 5 volts. And so you've got this whole series of things, little factors coming up to push you away from mobile phone batteries. And I don't have to say the thing that I've selected is a two USB connector, 100 milliamp, so 10,000 amp hour battery. I think that's correct. It's something incredible battery. And so this charges your phone, is basically your power bank. And we'll put this on the web page to you, and that costs around $34 delivered in from China. And now the advantage of this is this has two USB ports. Now, so it does the charging and the what is it? The charging and the I've got to really think about it. The charging and the so you can charge. So you can put in a USB port and have it continuously connected to your device. So, and now what I'm unsure of is whether you can put data in through your battery to your device. But the advantage of this is it's got an in and out, and so you can gang together as many of these as you like. You know, once you just put them together, and so the next idea is to go to one of these. And once you go to one of these, the Feather chip loses its supremacy, because the Feather chip combines the wireless with combines wireless with data control with a chip with controlling a battery. This is a very small form factor board. So let's get back into the generation. I think our generation, the idea is that you design a PCB board and you populate it with components. Now that's, the days of doing that are over, unfortunately, where you design your own circuit and build it. What you do is you have these mini boards and you gang them up together in various configurations to do what you want to do. And or you get a mini board and it's populated with things that you want. And this is the Feather Hussar thing. So it's got a very small form factor, but it's got sort of limitations. It's got only one analog input, and that's to 1 volt. It's only got one analog output, input output, and it's got probably at 13 digital outputs, and two of those are plus another two for the USB outputs. So a USB is a serial bus, and you have a read-write line in your serial bus. So a USB, it really is nothing more than a 1970s serial port with a different plug. And so the plugs, they have improved a little bit, but sort of not an awful lot. The standards have improved, the speeds have improved, but the actual technology is pretty much the same. that being said, so this little board has a, and I think the board costs around $30, $20. And this is basically the board is no longer useful because the battery is no longer useful because you want to run a thermocouple. This is one of the things you do with your research prototype. So I'm just having a walk around Glenbrook Park at this point in time and having a drink from an iced coffee every once in a while, sort of stopping every once in a while. The answer which is, so this is technically where I'm going, but I've got sort of no qualms that someone else may want to get out and do it. I'll eventually be able to do something better, because I'll be able to basically give you research paper quality, you know, put the hands of a student, the ability to measure not milligrams but micrograms reliably without drift, calibrated, and temperature possibly or easily. I think I would be able to guarantee to a tenth of a degree reliably and accurately with no drift and everything being recorded. Now, that's the sort of commercial value. The patent value is that there's a series of innovations, which perhaps wouldn't surprise you. But I can't talk about it. We'll talk about it as we go through. And so those things will come through in the production prototype. So I built the research prototype, and the research prototype is served its day. So a research prototype basically answers questions for a researcher, allows you to vary things and test system out and select what to make in the production prototype. So we're talking about moving on to the production prototype. And I suppose the good news here is that some of the components are changing from the piss-weak mobile and expensive and difficult to transport mobile phone battery to basically a power bank. And some of the advantage of these things is that they've got uses outside, and sort of the selection of the power bank having the properties that can work. Now, even the important thing is that even if the power bank doesn't, you can't put data through it, there are other ways. So the power bank has a USB in and a USB out, so it's almost as though you can put the USB power cord in series with your component, and so there's nothing to worry about. Now, the thing is that the power bank, as opposed to a LiPo battery, produces 5.5 volts, so that's ideal for a number of reasons. One is that your sensors want that, so that's really a sensor thing, and we have the space and the thing to actually place it in one of these orcas, Orax. Put it in an ORAC. That's observe, reason, and conceptualize. Putting it in one of those things there. And the other thing of an ORAC is that it is to play actually a physical role in the classroom or in the lab. It is something that you can use and relate to. It's all self-contained rather than basically a series of cutlery and crockery that you get to go around and put. Okay, so let's do that. So we've got this little chip, and you've got the Arduino chip, or the Arduino board, which is a fairly standard board. However, there is such a board called the Arduino Mega. It's 50% larger than the normal board, and it has wireless, so you can just have wireless on it, and it has a series of five jumper pins which you can select. And what it means is that you can select your Arduino to basically be equivalent to your Feather, but it's much larger and produces 5 volts, which is good. But it also does this other things. It's got, rather than 15, it's got 54 digital outputs rather than one analog output. It's got 16. I think that's not even the start of it. And then there's probably another 20 digital outputs. So what this means is that some of the cheaper satellite boards like the load cells. Each load cell takes up two digital outputs, easily two digital outputs. And so that's sort of I've really sort of maxed out what's required there. So the Arduino Mega board only costs $10. Then there's another series of boards there, and essentially you get more and more accuracy by your A to D converters. And also you can buy sort of top of the end, top of the range thermocouples, you can buy, rather than being able to power one thermocouple, you can bulk buy five robust thermocouples for $15. And so you can imagine this all coming together. Still, the actual fundamental problems of how to wire this up so it's not just a complete Heath Robinson of wires poking out. There's sort of like the amateurs thing where each board has a wire coming out of vertically, going up, arching down, coming gracefully. So it's sort of like looking at the flight patterns of the globe, all these things popping up. It's a real dog's breakfast. So I really haven't... I can see how to actually build it. And so as I've been going through, I've just been quietly building up an order for it. And one of the things is that I will have to assess whether I hit the tit, so to speak, as they used to say in the army with the mines. You'd have the series of mines which would be hand held, and this little button you'd press, physio button, would let the whole series of mines go off. So there's a term, hit the tit. So I don't know. It means that press the button on it, order it, and put it together. And sort of consider the benefit of saying, yeah, if you do build it and deliver it. So rather than pay for it up front, saying, look, I'd like to build it and sell it. Sell it to you. So this is only $100, this would include the software to record it, and so essentially this is a basic chemistry evaluation teaching program, and so we'll probably have five or six temperature sensors, a atmospheric pressure sensor, possibly a carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide sensor. Putting in, it's all fairly simple, simple to put in. And a mass scale and pH sensor, and essentially the software that records it all live forever. What's it on? And basically, I'm trying to think of basically how you switch it on. So it's all hands free. So once it's plugged on, it's producing data, and at your leisure, you can actually pull out the lab view to actually analyze what you've done. Now, as I've said before, there's two other sort of killer inventions which go in. So it's very similar to our former research days, where there's sort of very smart ways of going ahead, but the actual commercialization is one step ahead. So you've got your advanced laboratory, which puts you out in front, but the actual thing which is commercializable is that up there. So that's putting it to you to consider, Professor Canning, and we'll see how it goes. And again, this is a podcast, part of, if you can imagine, the general commercialization. This is the ability to communicate, put things together, and I'll slowly get there. So, and this is one of the great things, that you put out these things and you get a very clear idea who's in and who's out and what's going on. So thanks a lot, and I'll see how things go.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.